first message this afternoon, sermonette, Mr. Scott Thuvin.
Thank you, Mr. Garvin, and good afternoon, everyone. This year, at the Feast of Tabernacles, my family, while at Gatlinburg, toured the Titanic Museum. I don't know if any of the others who went to Gatlinburg also went there or not. I don't see any hands out there. Well, maybe this will be news to you then. The Titanic Museum, even on the outside, is made to look like that great ocean liner. And when you get inside, they take you on a tour. A lot of information is presented about that fateful voyage, the one and only voyage that the Titanic was ever to sail. It was very interesting. And at one point, one of the cast members, the crew members there, told us a very interesting story. She said that one of the ladies who survived was a new mother. It was very cold outside, about 28 degrees, and she had a newborn baby, and so she bundled up that baby with several blankets, just wrapped it entirely, and then she took it out on the deck, cradled in her arms, to go board the lifeboat. One of the stewards who was there organizing and overseeing the passengers boarding the lifeboats mistook that baby, all bundled in blankets, for a parcel. And he seized that parcel from her hands and threw it overboard. Well, the cast member, the tour guide there, told us that we'd have to wait, and later in the tour, someone would tell us the rest of the story as far as what happened to that little child. Well, I'm not going to make you wait. I'm going to go ahead and tell you right now. Because when we got ahead and heard the rest of the story, we were relieved to know that that child was caught in the arms of another woman who was already down in a lifeboat in the water. She caught that child. And then the mother and the child were eventually reunited. And so it did have a happy ending. Thankfully, no harm came to her. We related this story to some of our friends who were there at the feast as well, who had not been with us on the Titanic tour. And one of our friends made a comment to us that I thought was very poignant. She said, "I guess that just reminds us and illustrates the fact that things are not always as they appear." Well, we all agreed with her, and I like to think that all of you would too. I think it's an important thing for us to remember in God's church, and that's what I'd like us to spend our time in today's sermonette doing, looking to see that, in fact, things are not always as they appear. It's an important reminder for us. Please turn with me to the book of Genesis, chapter 29. We're going to read verses 16 through 30. Genesis 29, 16 through 30. Just to set the stage, this is an account with which most of us, I think, are well familiar. It's about Jacob, when he had fled his homeland from his brother Esau, and he had gone back to his family's home country, to the house of his uncle Laban. In verse 16, we'll pick up the story. "Now Laban had two daughters. The name of the elder was Leah, and the name of the younger was Rachel. Leah's eyes were delicate, but Rachel was beautiful of form and appearance. Now Jacob loved Rachel, and he said, 'I will serve you, Laban, 7 years for Rachel, your younger daughter.' And Laban said, 'It is better that I give her to you than that I should give her to another man. Stay with me.' So Jacob served 7 years for Rachel, and they seemed to him but a few days because of the love he had for her. Then Jacob said to Laban, 'Give me my wife, for my days are fulfilled, that I may go into her.' And Laban gathered together all the men of the place and made a feast. Now it came to pass in the evening that he took Leah, his daughter, and brought her to Jacob, and he went into her. And Laban gave his maid Zilpah to his daughter Leah as a maid. So it came to pass in the morning that, behold, it was Leah. And he said to Laban, "What is this that you have done to me? Was it not for Rachel that I served you? Why then have you deceived me?" And Laban said, "It must not be done so in our country, to give the younger before the firstborn. Fulfill her week, and we will give you this one also for the service which you will serve with me still another 7 years." Then Jacob did so and fulfilled her week. So Laban gave him his daughter Rachel as wife also. And Laban gave his maid Bilpah to his daughter Rachel as a maid. Then Jacob also went into Rachel, and he also loved Rachel more than Leah, and he served with Laban still another 7 years. Okay, what happened here? Jacob had returned to the home of his father's country in search of a wife. He had gone and met Laban. He saw Laban's daughter, the youngest, Rachel. It was love at first sight. We're told that she was beautiful. And he said, "I'll serve you, Laban, 7 years for her." Well, he did. But what happened? Did he get what he bargained for? No. He was deceived. We just read that. He was deceived. And he was given her older sister instead. You know, commentaries are interesting and of use sometimes for helping us to understand the biblical passages that we read. One commentary I read about this stated, "Surely this should have been no surprise to Jacob. If he had lived 7 years in the community, surely he would have seen women given in marriage. He would have learned of the customs of the community." Well, that may be so, but I think we still have to take the biblical account as it's written. And here, in what we've just read in verse 25, Jacob makes no bones about it. He didn't see this coming. He was deceived. Now consider the circumstance for just a moment. We're told that he worked these 7 years for this woman. Now think a moment. 7 years is a long time, brethren. I mean, God had said man would live 70 years, maybe if by strength, 80 years. I mean, it's not like back in the days of Adam and Methuselah where men were living for hundreds of years. 10 years was a long time to work in servitude for a wife. But we're told in verse 20, those 7 years seemed to Jacob but as a few days. Why? Because of the great love he had for his soon-to-be bride. For 7 years, Jacob had lived right there in Laban's household as part of the family. I mean, obviously, he wasn't living as husband and wife yet with Rachel. That hadn't been accorded him yet, properly so. But he was right there. You might think that could have been heaven or hell for Jacob, because there was Rachel right under his nose, just at arm's length. Did he see her continually? When I say it, it could have been a sentence of difficulty if he'd think, "Oh, this is awful. I have to wait and wait." But based on what we just read, that it seemed as only a few days, I think it was more the heavenly sentence instead, because every day he would undoubtedly have seen her. We're told previously in the account that she worked as a shepherdess, taking care of her father's flocks. Undoubtedly, Jacob must have seen her coming and going in the yard, in the fields, taking the animals out to pasture, looking after them. He must have seen her readily. He must have studied her and looked at her continually and thought, "Oh, someday she's going to be my bride. Someday." He must have studied her with admiration. He must have noted the way she walked, the way she moved, the way she held herself and carried herself. He probably noted the way she smelled. He probably sat near her at the dinner table. Think about the walks they may have taken together. Maybe the touch of her hand once in a while. If ever anybody had incentive, an opportunity to get to know someone else, I imagine Jacob did. What a study he must have been of his future bride. You know, I'm reminded of a movie that my family and I just watched the other night. Gene Kelly, I think, was talking to Judy Garland. And he said, "I want to learn everything about you. What you like, where you like to go, what you like to eat. It may take years." You know, often when we see these romantic movies, I'll ask just at the end of the movie, "Do you think they'll get married?" And Sherry will say, "Well, of course they will." That was the situation here with Jacob and Rachel. I imagine he could spot her at a great distance and recognize her instantly. That's Rachel. I'm reminded of another movie. I don't know if there's any Gone with the Wind fans in here. My daughter enjoys that movie. But I think of the scene where Scarlett is talking with her sister-in-law, Melanie. The war is over, and all these bedraggled soldiers are making their way back home to the broken South. And there stands Scarlett, and looking down the road, she remarks, "Here comes another one of these waifs coming along, these strays. We don't have food for the ones that are already here. What are we to do with them?" But Melanie just smiles, always smiles for Melanie, looked over at her sister-in-law and just said, "We'll find something." And then she gazes upward and sees in the distance this solitary figure. Hesitates for just a moment. And then her hands fly up to her face. And then she instantly gathers her skirt and aprons and begins charging down the road. Scarlett stands there thinking, "Well, what's wrong with her? Where is she going?" And only then does Scarlett realize it is Melanie's beloved Ashley. Her lifelong love. I always thought that's kind of a testimony to the fact that Scarlett really didn't understand love. She never did. But Melanie, who was always so kind-spirited, she did. And there was her love in the distance. She recognized him from that distance. I like to think Jacob would have looked at Rachel similarly, saying, "Ah, there's Rachel. I would know her anywhere." Well, brethren, I have spent a great deal of time here this morning reviewing this story, because I want to make sure that we all understand the background to that fateful night when Jacob went in to his new bride. We're told here, when finally their wedding night arrived, in the evening, Laban brought Leah to Jacob, and he went into her. And then we're told in verse 25, in the morning, behold, it was Leah. Behold! That sounds like something a new sculptor would say as he unveils his latest masterwork. Behold! There's no mention of Jacob realizing this the previous evening. There's no mention of Jacob confronting Laban when Laban brought Leah to him. Him saying, "Wait a minute here, Pops, what are you trying to pull? Are you trying to pull a slickie on me? That's not Rachel. That's Leah. I would know Rachel anywhere, and this is not her." Every indication of the biblical record shows that Jacob was deceived. The lesson for all of us: we too can be deceived. Even when we have reason to feel confident that we know everything thoroughly, it is possible. Deception is a real possibility. Sometimes deceptions may be innocent and unintentional, just like that steward on the Titanic. He certainly did not mean to intentionally throw that little helpless baby overboard. In fact, he thought he was saving life, saying, "No room in the lifeboat for any parcels or baggage, only for people." Sometimes, though, deceptions can be deliberate, as in the case we've just read here with Laban. We need to remember that deception is one of Satan's greatest weapons that he uses against God's people. Turn with me, please, to Matthew 24. Very familiar scriptures here with which you're all familiar. Matthew 24. We'll read verses 4, 24, and 25. In Matthew 24, verse 4, Jesus answered and said to them, the disciples, "Take heed that no one deceives you." Christ's words there, take heed. Be careful. Pay attention. Be alert. Be vigilant. Don't let it happen. And then, in verses 24 and 25, Christ continued, "For false Christs and false prophets will arise and show great signs and wonders so as to deceive, if possible, even the elect. See, I have told you beforehand." In other words, I've warned you. I've told you. This could happen. If possible at all, it could. It's possible for God's elect to be deceived. It's a very real possibility. Therefore, brethren, we need to be ever mindful of this. We need to strive to stay close to God, to live our lives as He's instructed us, to be vigilant, steady in prayer and Bible study, meditation with regular fasting, and always to pray that we will not be deceived. You know, the stories that we've examined today both had happy endings. On the Titanic, both mother and child survived. It's interesting to note that that mother went on to be very active in the Red Cross as it was getting established here in America. And likewise, Jacob finally did marry Rachel. As Christians, we look forward to the ultimate happy ending, and that's God's kingdom. But between now and then, brethren, we need to be ever vigilant and guard against deception, because it is a real possibility. It happened to Jacob. It could happen to us. Because sometimes, brethren, things are not as they appear.